Miami loves football, the world loves football, and the world loves Miami. You deserve to be, and you will be, qualified for the FIFA Club World Cup 2025. And as the host team, you will have the honor of hosting the opening game here in Miami at the Hard Rock Stadium in front of 65,000 people and tens of millions at home.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Yes, here for our big, big extravaganza. Yes, you've been waiting for it all this year. It is the Club World Cup fake draw.
No.
Yay!
What? What do you mean no?
I mean, yay! Yeah, I'll just drop in the yay. You can edit in my yay later. How's that?
Come on, you're excited. Come on, it's the Club World Cup. Oh, come on.
As you know, I do love a fake draw, but I'm just so excited about this particular tournament that I don't think I can contain myself. Is it not a little bit early? No, I suppose it isn't, is it? When does the actual draw happen?
Well, the actual draw's happening this Thursday.
Thursday?
I can't believe
I didn't know that.
It's in Miami. Yeah, they had to
do... your Emmy? What's he doing there, Graham?
No, the place.
Oh, I see.
Oh, right.
Miami.
No, it's not your Miami.
No.
Miami?
No, Jan. I'll be in your Miami. You're busy on Thursday, aren't you?
I am.
So is your Miami.
Well, of course it is. No, it is in Florida on Thursday. Yeah, so listeners know we're not going to do a fake draw for the Club World Cup. Were you really that interested? A bunch of teams are going to go in pots and then they're going to play each other next June.
You can't say it like that because when we come to do our next fake draw for a tournament that we actually care about, the listeners, they'll think, well, hang on a second. This is a pointless exercise.
Well, it's not a pointless exercise, is it? Because sometimes there are some people, Terry, that get so bought into it, almost like a method actor gets bought into his craft, that they actually start believing that the outcomes of some of these draws are real and start planning the holders around it.
Yeah.
And that, of course, is me.
You truly are a method podcaster.
I'm a method podcaster.
The next half an hour will be us discussing the merits and demerits of our own fake draw, because that's how meta we've become. Nothing else happened at the weekend.
And listeners, if you do want to listen to our fake draws from the past, ones from previous tournaments that we've done, then they're all in the archive. So if for any reason you wanted to listen to stuff like that, then they're all there for you, waiting for you to download. But we're not that excited about the Club World Cup, are we, Terry? In honesty.
In all honesty, no. It's the kind of thing that once upon a time, when I was particularly geeky about this sort of thing, I would have ruminated on what a Club World Cup would have looked like, a full-on summer tournament to replace, say, the Confederations Cup. And ruminated on that idea and thought, oh, that might be really interesting to watch. But that is a long way from actually doing it. And I think the actual doing of it, I think, is a complete, it's a tournament nobody truly asked for. And I don't think it's going to be a big success. And I just can't get worked up about clubs in the same way as I can do about international football in this kind of thing. I mean, I've not no interest in the English clubs specifically who are going. Dortmund are going, to be fair. So I suppose I could be persuaded to get up stupid o'clock, in the morning to watch Dortmund play. I can't even see myself even doing that. Maybe as we get closer, I don't know, but it feels to me like I'm just probably going to give this one a pass.
Yeah, and Jan, it's not really going to be worth taking out a DAZN subscription for, is it?
Is this going to require another subscription on top of all of my other subscriptions? Well, no, not if you're going to be asleep when the games are on. So, no.
No.
Which I definitely will be asleep when the games are on. It's like you said, Grim, you're not going to get up in the middle of the night to watch Chelsea play, are you? So
no, exactly. I'm not going to get up in the middle of the night to watch Man City play Auckland. I'm just not going to do that. Probably the guys in Auckland will be all right. They'll probably be able to watch their team. But it's a nice distraction, the draw for Pep. I wonder if he's going to be flying out to Miami for it. He needs a break, doesn't he, Terry?
Well, if he's not careful, he's going to get one. That game yesterday was recording. I mean, that was as comprehensive a 2-0 thrashing as I think I've ever seen, wasn't it? I mean, it really was only one team in it. Liverpool should have scored a lot more goals. Yeah, it almost seems impossible to conceive of. But what state will Manchester City be, you know, when they get to the Club World Cup? It is reassuringly old school Man City, though, isn't it? Because back in the day, before they got taken over by all that money, where they got all that money in them, and they were really run as this sort of like really ruthlessly efficient professional machine, they used to be a madcap chaotic club who would frequently shoot themselves in the foot. And that, to be fair, one of the reasons why they were such a popular club for neutrals was because, you know, they were capable of this. And this feels a little bit like what's happening. It's just suddenly they've gone from being the best team in the world to being the worst team in the world. And it's quite fun and reassuring. I'm sure City fans don't see it that way. Isn't it funny how you just go on for so long and then suddenly you just stop? Palace have got them in a couple of weeks' time. You think, well, yeah, we'll have this lot. They're rubbish.
To be fair, Palace are a bit of a bogey team for them, and maybe Palace saw something that no one else did.
I mean, when you say a bit of a bogey team, the last time we played them at Selhurst Park, they beat us 4-2. But yeah, in a way, it was 1-1 at half-time, to be fair.
I don't think City were awful in that game. They were still doing their thing with passing the ball around 30-odd times. And, you know, there was a time where I thought that they might come back into it. But the difference in quality between them and Liverpool yesterday was just huge. I mean, when Liverpool didn't have the ball, the fitness levels that side have is just incredible. The pace they were chasing down City when they were in possession, you know, although I did say that they were able to string quite a number of passes together, which is their usual form, that there were only a few periods where they were allowed to do that. So Liverpool just looked like the real deal. They looked imperious yesterday. And, you know, they were talking a lot on Sky yesterday and on the broadcast about maybe the earth is shifting beneath our feet here a little bit in English football anyway, and that Liverpool are now going to become the dominant force. It's a lot to say after 13 games, but it certainly looked that way. But looking at the whole week in context, Liverpool dispatched Real Madrid and then they put Man City to the sword as well. So that's a big week. I think that maybe we are starting to see a bit of a change. And yeah, it's good. You can't just have two clubs dominating like Arsenal and Manchester City have been doing. We need a bit of a shake-up. So it's a good thing.
There is something still in the back of my head about Liverpool. I know Liverpool fans would say, how many more absolutely amazing performances do we need to put out? But, and I think they all know this as well, is there are three key players at the moment that are winding down their contracts. And January is coming. And as soon as that window opens, those three are going to start manoeuvring. You've got Trent, you've got Virgil van Dijk, and you've got Mo Salah. Mo Salah, who is in a purple streak at the moment, but he has been, for the last few seasons, in a purple streak in the first half of the season. The second half, he drops off, usually. Usually. This is the pattern of things over the last two or three seasons. He could be playing for either a new contract or playing for a big move somewhere. Same with Trent, same with Virgil van Dijk. I think that's going to start having an effect in the new year. Slot's done well, not for it to be the biggest talking point around the club at the moment. And if they do hit a bump in the road, if they lose, say, a key player and they play a team that aren't mad as a box of frogs like City and not win a couple of games in a row, how will the pressure start to mount? And will people be focusing more on the fact of, like, when are you going to announce that either Salah is staying or Trent's staying? Or can you keep talk of Trent going to Real Madrid, Virgil van Dijk going anywhere, and Mo Salah, where is he going to go next? Because he looks great at the moment. And if Liverpool don't come up with, say, a 3 or 4 year deal that he may want, then he may be off. And they may be off as soon as January. So that's what I think. Anyways, all these things are going to start affecting the way the results go for them. And at the moment, things are going great. 9-point lead at the top, brilliant. But we've seen those go before. And Arsenal have had a rough patch. City have had a rough patch. Villa are in the middle of a rough patch. So, let's not get too excited because I think Liverpool's rough patch is coming. I may be wrong. Prove me wrong, Liverpool.
Friend of a friend suggesting that the Saudi Pro League are a strong vibe from the Saudi Pro League that they'll get Salah this summer. I suppose it's conceivable that they might do a compensation deal to get him for January. But I think that there's a strong sentiment that he's ready to come because I think the feeling is they'll let him commute from home, from Egypt, basically. You know, I don't mean commuting every day, but he'll certainly be allowed to go home and then base himself from Egypt and then work in Saudi. I mean, a lot of the Saudi Pro League players actually live in Qatar rather than in Saudi Arabia. So that there's a lot of strong vibes in that, and that Mo might well be agreeable with that because he's, you know, perhaps after so many years of living in Europe that he feels it might be quite good to go home. And they'll be offering him a potload of cash as well. But, you know, I don't know what that does to the psychology thing. I think for me, it's whether these injuries and form. I mean, you're right about Mohamed Salah. He can fall off perhaps towards the end of the season. I think Trent is a terrific player, but he might be galvanised by the fact that he gets that signing a pre-contract for Real Madrid, which I personally think is what he will do, even though I don't know him and I'm not even close to it. But that just feels like, you know, there's a hole in that fullback slot where Danny Carvajal was, and I think that they're going to fill it with Trent, and I think he'll be a terrific player for Real Madrid.
Oh, yeah.
I'd actually like to see that.
The rumour I heard today through one of my little groups was that Salah was off to PSG on a freebie at the end of the season, but that is just a rumour.
Mm.
Rumours and rumours.
Or maybe not.
The prospect of Trent and Jude Bellingham on the same team.
Yeah. You want to see it, don't you?
Yeah, you do want to see that. Mm. And sorry, Liverpool fans, but yes, I do want to see that. You want to see that too, don't you, Ian?
I think it would be great. So, mind you, Rob Bellingham probably needs a bit of help because he's not lighting up La Liga like he was last year, was he? To be fair, Madrid aren't lighting up La Liga like they were last year. So, but yeah, I think he'd certainly improve that squad.
Well, Terry mentioned the Saudi Pro League, and of course one of the things that FIFA may not be talking about this week because they're too busy with the Club World Cup is the fact that their report into the 2034 World Cup was published late on Friday, wasn't it, Terry?
At midnight Friday, CET, in the middle of the night for Europe.
Odd time, wasn't it?
It depends where you are in the world, Graham. Yeah. But if you wanted to publish something that was remotely controversial, then you would probably do it at midnight while Europe was asleep, because that's where the Western sort of like media is and the liberal democracies are, and where you're most likely to get what passes for scrutiny in modern media these days. But it was published and then it was then shared on social media, certainly in my corner of social media, pretty rapidly immediately afterwards, along with another report from FIFA's own Human Rights Commission from the Qatar World Cup. So a couple of fairly heavyweight reports published at the same time in the middle of the night on a Friday.
And what was the upshot of these reports? Was the one into Saudi Arabia saying anything like, well, you know, the Qatar World Cup wasn't very popular and there was all manner of problems with it, and how are we going to play this thing? Was it that in-depth? I can imagine it. A lot of pros and cons about having a World Cup in Saudi Arabia, even if there is a good 10 years before it actually happens.
It was a lengthy document, Graham. I'll say that.
I would imagine so.
To what extent it's in-depth, I'm not altogether certain. I will confess and say that I only read the executive. It was 64-odd pages, and I simply don't have the time to read through 64 pages of that. I'm not an investigative journalist. I don't have the time to do it. I read the executive summary. But to all intents and purposes, you'll be pleased to learn, for those of you who are worried that there might not be a World Cup in 2034, you'll be pleased to know that with a few minor considerations, the Saudi bid is a good, strong bid, and I believe it's going to be ratified later in the month, and that there's no genuine concerns. Any issues will be resolved in the fullness of time, and that's minor issues such as, you know, human rights abuses and the fact that stadiums and the cities where those stadiums are being held have yet to be built yet. But, you know, beyond that, everything looks tickety-boo. They use a little traffic light system for their approval ratings, and it's all mostly green with a few oranges. No reds, you'll be pleased to know.
Oh, good. I hope building a football stadium in the sky has got the green light, because I love that idea. You love that idea too, don't you, Ian?
I love it. I'd love to hear more about it, Grim.
Well, apparently in their futuristic city, Neom, it's basically this imaginative world that you would find in a 1960s new wave science fiction novella, isn't it, Terry? It's a linear city, a long, long city in the desert. And sat on top of this linear city is going to be a football stadium, 350 metres above the ground. Terry, this all sounds great, doesn't it? This sounds like it would have made a great film in the 80s.
Yeah, by Golden Globus, but with a minuscule budget, and it would have been absolutely terrible. Yeah, so the line is what it's called. And yeah, absolutely, the principle behind it is instead of a city being a big sprawling mass, it's just literally a line that goes across the desert. And it's all compartmentalized into its own little sort of like mini hamlets across the line. And then, yes, as part of that will be this new stadium, apparently, so we're told. But the line is very much under construction at the moment, and no one lives there. So this is all in the works. There's obviously no issues with funding, sponsored by the Saudi royal family, so there's no issues there. And this thing will be built. And yeah, I'm not entirely certain what the line is going to look like when it's built. But yeah, I think that's going to be its pièce de résistance. And that's basically what the Saudi World Cup, I think, is supposed to be. Is it's supposed to be sort of a part of a sort of like focal point for what they say is a great deal of regeneration.
It sounds like Blade Runner in the sun, doesn't it? I've just had an awful image flash into my mind of Gianni Infantino sitting at the top of this stadium, the baking sun, holding a dove saying, "I've seen things you people wouldn't believe."
I'd believe that.
Strong Roy Batty energy going on with Uncle Gianni.
Yeah,
this is the thing, though. All of these guys, their heroes are the villains. They're following on that narrative of Hollywood now, which tries to make movies about understanding sort of like classic villains. That's why, you know, The Joker was such a popular film and presumably why its sequel was such a disaster. These guys have just got massive James Bond villain complexes, all of them. And it's, I mean mental complexes. I mean, they probably have massive James Bond villain actual complexes as well, to be fair. Which is what this line looks like it's going to be. I think it's effectively, it's going to be a place. If they get it right, I mean, it could be a horrific ghetto. But if they get it right, it will be where the super rich go to live through the rigors of the climate disaster. And the rest of us on the outside, presumably providing service for it. It's a truly dystopian in its ambition. And the, you know, FIFA World Cup is here for it.
Yes, it is. This particular football special of Black Mirror has a football stadium in the sky. Gianni Infantino is being given his own purpose-built hollowed-out volcano. And yes, it seems crazy, but it's true. And in fact, Qatar 22 was really just laying the groundwork for it, wasn't it, really? It was just saying, look, you can do it. You can mess up everyone else's calendar and you can have a World Cup around Christmas time. And it'll work, and don't worry, it'll be fine. Yeah, and we still ended up watching it, didn't we?
I think you're right, though. 2022 has paved the way for this. I think it would have been a lot harder for FIFA to give such a glowing endorsement to Saudi Arabia as a host for 34 if they hadn't already given it to Qatar. Almost maybe they were testing the water with that. Saudi are the sole bidder for 2034 World Cup, aren't they? There is no competition other than taste and decency standing against them. So it looks like it's just a shoo-in, doesn't it? It's going to happen.
Yeah, well, who can afford to put on a 48-team World Cup now? I don't know even if the FA would be able to do that, and they've got pots of money. I can't see a country being able to put on a 48-team World Cup anymore unless they're willing to take the hit. The Saudi government are almost certainly going to be paying all the money that FIFA aren't going to earn on the Club World Cup, this running of the Club World Cup, and will probably bankroll the next one as well, just so that it keeps going until the Club World Cup ends up in Saudi Arabia in 2033, which will be the third running of it in this big bloated format. And really, Terry, it's looking like Saudi Arabia are going to be doing what they've already done with boxing, what they are doing with golf, and to some extent what they're doing with Formula One as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, they're one of the few countries that has the kind of money to be able to match the ambitions of the sports organisers. In the case of golf, for example, they've set up an organization called Live Golf. It's a rival competition. It's based on a team format. It's proving to be extremely divisive. It's a rival to the PGA. I'm not a golf person, but I mean, I know a little bit about it. And a number of players have gone over to the other side. Now, I don't know whether or not Saudi Arabia would necessarily seek to do something like that, although I don't believe that it's unheard of in football, but they don't really need to. What they need to do is what they're doing now. And that's in FIFA, they have a compliant partner who probably has convinced itself that it's working for the greater good by including, you know, murderous regimes like Saudi Arabia in its plans and as part of the FIFA family. But ultimately what it means is it gets to match the ambitions of FIFA and its tournaments. And when the rest of the world at the moment is struggling with far deeper and far greater concerns, it's hard to imagine any of the Western democracies being able to support a 48-team World Cup on its own, possibly in consort with others going forward. I mean, you know, we have got the United States in 26, and then there's mostly Spain, bit of Morocco, obviously with the three South American countries and the following one. Beyond that, economically, politically, you know, we're moving into the European countries and the Western democracies are moving into a realm where they're going to be massively ravaged by climate change. They're being increasingly taken over by authoritarian right-wing governments. And then they're going to be troubled places to go economically. Are they going to be able to sustain that? I'm sure there'll be plenty of authoritarian strongmen types who would love the idea of hosting a World Cup, because it makes them look like big men and helps them win the elections that they're probably rigging anyway. But where does that money come from and where does that compliance come from? I feel that the future of international football is very much in the Middle East between Qatar and Saudi Arabia. And one could make that argument that club football could end up going that way. You certainly look at things like Formula One and you have to ask yourself whether it's sort of like a bit of a carve up between those two Middle Eastern giants. Economic giants, I should say. So one part of you thinks, well, this is just the way the world is going. I mean, the political and economic power in the world is moving east from where we sit. And maybe we just have to reconcile ourselves to that. But, you know, these are not democracies. These are not places where human rights are valued. These are places where they will happily kill people, you know, execute people and, you know, extrajudiciously and discriminate against minorities and against other groups that in where we come from, you know, we don't do that, or at least we don't do that as much as they do. And so in that respect, it's discouraging and disappointing.
Yeah, I agree. And what is also disappointing on that is that FIFA's own report, not on the last World Cup, but certainly on its assessment as Saudi Arabia as a suitable partner for this tournament, they said that the tournament could act as a catalyst for human rights reform and even scored it on their own three-point scale as a medium risk to human rights, which is a huge understatement. As well as that, just a complete blatant lie. I mean, anyone looking at the use of medium risk on human rights and Saudi Arabia in the same sentence, this in an actual official report by the governing body of world football, is disgraceful. It's almost like they haven't even bothered to try and whitewash this. You know, Saudi Arabia are trying to sports wash their reputation, which we know about. And Graham, you give good examples across other sports there. But FIFA aren't even trying to do that. This is the worst cover-up of nefarious activity that there is. They just brandished it. And that's probably why, Terry, that they chose to bury it on a Friday night so it missed some of the big titles going into the weekend.
So what's the deal with Infantino? Why is he doing this? Is this just his long game for lust for power to be the new Blatter, to just dominate football globally, paid by his Saudi paymasters? Or is there a plan for football? Is it to say, well, look, football can't survive without this? Is that his twisted way of looking at it?
I think it's probably more to do with legacy. You're right. He's going to look at Blatter and look at how the World Cups really were successful during that period. And he'd want to have said that on my watch, some of the biggest, most extravagant tournaments took place. And I expanded it to 48 and put it in all these different countries. We opened up the Middle East. There'll be things like that. I would imagine he'd want in his legacy. I think there's also a bit of he's seen how successful European club football has been, so the Champions League, for example, and wants to create something that he believes can rival that on a global scale, which is obviously the Club World Cup, which is not going to happen. As Terry said, he's found a willing partner that's going to bankroll this for him. And it's, to be fair, it's not just Saudi, is it? There are other very, very wealthy regimes across the Middle East, most notably Qatar, that he was quite happy to get into bed with. I'm not saying for a second that he's on the tick. I say that a bit ambitiously, but what these regimes have got here is a useful idiot who has got grandiose plans to leave a legacy with his name all over it, quite literally, in the example of the Club World Cup trophy, twice, in fact. And it works well for them to be able to just throw money at him, which is limitless for those guys, to enable them to wash their reputation.
Well, I don't know about you listeners, but I'm really looking forward to Bald FIFA Guy, The Useful Idiot, published next Christmas. And Jan's going to be working on that all year. I'm sure it'll be a great read, won't it, Terry?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Infantino's remit was Blatter's remit. It was Haviland's remit, and that's to expand FIFA. That's his mandate, and that's what he's doing. He's lucked out because he's arrived at a time geopolitically where the Middle East are looking to flex their muscles economically, spend huge amounts of money from their public investment funds in all manner of different areas across all different industries, in sport and in other areas too, in different businesses, financing all manner of different projects in order to exercise soft on its way to being hard power. And sport is an absolutely superb way and very, very effective way of doing that because it's incredibly popular. It's an excellent cultural entry point, particularly into the Western and European markets as well, because they're lucrative markets still. And they're an opportunity to be able to shape and change minds about Saudi Arabia and the amount of money that they spend. Breaking the deadlock of the various different American and UK promoters for boxing and saying, yeah, guys, don't worry about it. You want to have a fight? You guys want to have a fight? Yeah, you could come over here. We'll like put up the purse for it. No worries about it. It's all done. Bypassing all of those years of boxing promoters arguing with each other about how much the purse is going to be and how long it's going to take to get up a fight. And the Saudis going, yeah, no worries. We'll do a season pass and we'll just do it here. And they invite a load of influencers over there to put those fights on. And they win friends that way. And they figure that that's what will happen with football. And they're probably right. And I hate to say it, but they're probably right because most people don't concern themselves with any deeper matters than that. Most people don't listen to The Sound of Football or podcasts similar to The Sound of Football that think about these things and other podcasts that do more than just think about them, but they analyze and research them and investigate them. Human rights problems, they're not really going to think about it. Not for the World Cup, but for as part of Saudi Arabia's regeneration, there's been a huge amount of forced relocation and deaths as a consequence of kicking existing populations out of where they want to be because they want to build a brand new city on top of them. Bedouin populations who have been in situ in those grounds for generations, for centuries, conceivably, turfed out at the point of a gun. These are not nice people, but most people won't know. And there will be some who, if they do know, they won't care because it doesn't concern them. I don't want to be down about it, but it isn't nice. And I can't really see any kind of active resistance or powerful resistance to it. I don't see anybody playing ball. I certainly don't see other governments having the time and the energy to fight the Saudis on this because they rely on them too much. They rely on them too much for oil, for fossil fuel, but they also now increasingly rely on them for backing of their own private sector, in their various countries where they get a lot of money from their public investment funds. So it's not a fashionable, from their point of view, enemy to have. I mean, like we are, the UK government is allies with Saudi Arabia, strong friends with Saudi Arabia and has been for a long time and just turns a blind eye to these things because they don't see that they've got a choice. It's much easier when it's Russia because Russia are nasty and they invade friends of ours. And, we are historically antagonistic towards them. But Saudi, that's just not the case. And yeah, it's difficult to see a way forward, really.
Mm. I was listening to a politics podcast the other day with a former member of the British government was in it. And he was saying that with these regimes where they always get asked by the press afterwards, did you raise human rights with them? And they go say, of course, we raised it in the strongest terms. And he said, the reality is that's just bullshit. It gets raised and a spad will cough all over the chap when he's raising it so it doesn't get heard and doesn't get translated. Or at the most, it gets heard and the Saudis just go, noted, thank you, can we move on? And they do. Because, you know, when he talks, unfortunately, which is effectively, or Grimm said this to me ages ago, when you ask any question in football, the answer is always money. And that's the answer to this, really, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But, of course, the alternatives aren't going to be better, are they? We've talked about the simmering cold war that there is between FIFA and UEFA at the moment. Talk about how there could be a huge division in global football. But I just can't see that happening because the stakeholders in football won't want that. It's only really the organisations themselves that really want that. We've seen the whole thing about the Super League. The Super League wasn't a driving force. It was a symptom of what is going wrong in the way that football is run everywhere. The reason why the Super League isn't going away, or the concept of it isn't going away, is because all the problems that created it are still there. And all the people that are willing it to happen are still there. And they're the same sort of people that are getting behind the Saudi bid because they just want the money. And they want to contain the money as well. They don't want to see it spread around football. It is horrible, but it's not just the Saudi World Cup bid. It's a much, much bigger thing, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah, and it goes back to what is football being used for? It's being used for people, you know, to obtain power and to earn money, and you just go where the money is. And if you've got two rival federations like UEFA, who perhaps arguably are getting too big for their boots, they might look at FIFA's move eastwards as maybe some kind of threat and say, well, we want the power base for football to be where it here in Europe, because that's where the best players are. That's where the most historic clubs are. And that is probably where the still, you know, very much the most lucrative marketplace. But all of that can, you know, relatively easily and relatively quickly change, especially if there's enough money behind it. And Europeans can start to look eastward if they're given enough incentive to. You just don't know where or if there's ever going to be any kind of breaking point and what that would look like. But, you know, for decades, literally for decades, we, you know, Graham, you and I and others, you know, when we were doing the Onion Bag, we kind of, our feeling was editorially was that football was dancing on a volcano and that, you know, this was not sustainable. And yet we're still here, and it still feels like their football is constantly on a precipice of some kind of collapse. But as the money keeps flooding in, then it's difficult to know what that collapse would look like. But what I look to the future of certainly of the international game and to an extent the club game, and I don't really see anything to be terribly excited about, if I'm being honest with you. I love watching football, but becoming increasingly uncomfortable with the direction in which it's going.
I mean, this is a trick as old as time, really, with some of these regimes where they're using sport to just placate the masses. So just looking at Saudi Arabia, I think we talked about this before, they've got a very young population that look west and see some of the freedoms and the entertainments that Europeans and Americans take for granted and want some of that themselves, because a lot of them are fairly wealthy young things. So golf and boxing and the Saudi Pro League and just throwing as much money as you can at Ronaldo to get him go and play there every couple of weeks, buying football clubs in the UK to sports wash and then effectively taking over international football, all serves well at home. When you're running out of oil reserves, but you've still got loads of money left, you need to pivot to get your incomes from somewhere, and you're going to need your population along with you, because you've got regimes that are as vicious as Saudi Arabia, but they're only in place because of the complicity of their own people. If they rose up, it would be gone in a day. But if you keep them happy and you have the threat of a gun pointing towards them, then there's never a problem. So it all works quite well because the money men in football want the money. And the Saudis are quite happy to give it to them. And then they keep their people quiet and sports wash their reputation abroad. It's a happy cycle.
It's not that happy, is it?
No, it's not. It's pretty awful, really.
Yeah.
No, it's dashed miserable is what it is, unfortunately.
Okay. Maybe we should lighten the tone of this very, very heavy podcast. Because it's December now. It's coming up to Christmas.
Yay.
Maybe we should talk a bit more about City being rubbish. That's always good for a laugh, isn't it?
Because we can't talk about Man United being rubbish anymore, can we? Because they're brilliant all of a sudden.
No, and they're playing Arsenal this week.
Yeah, Man United are now brilliant.
Breaking.
They beat Everton.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They beat Everton. And, oh, yeah, Everton, by the way, Dyche is being sacked before the end of the year, isn't he?
Oh, I think so. I think that they're holding off until the takeover happens, assuming it happens. I think the moment the Friedkin group take over, then I believe that he will be given his toast.
Yeah. Have you seen their fixtures coming up? They're pretty, pretty awful.
I haven't actually, no.
Well, I'll let you do that and then you can decide for yourself. But what will we be watching this weekend, I wonder? Well, Everton are playing at home, and actually Everton are playing in the Merseyside Derby. They are at home to Liverpool. That's going to go well, isn't it, Jan?
Well, I don't think it's going to go well for Everton. As I said earlier, Liverpool looks so good at the moment, and I think that's going to be a one to forget for Everton.
Terry, see, I don't think Dyche is going to survive that one, I don't think.
Yeah, I feel that until the takeover happens, I don't think there's any point in firing the coach, unless, of course, the takeover is not ratified but effectively happening, at which point the new guys have moved in and they're starting to move their people in. I believe there's strong talk about Maurizio Sarri making a return to the Premier League with Everton, with the new owners. So, but none of that's happened yet. It could be that he's fired, but equally the problem is that I don't think that Moshiri is keen to commit to any more compensation packages at this point when he's just on the verge of selling up. So actually, if they could be stuck with Dyche for a little bit longer than they would want. Unless, of course, they lose 9-0, in which case then, where is the game being held?
It's at Goodison. It's the last Merseyside derby at Goodison. So historic.
There's going to be consequences if it's, so there'll be consequences if it's a bad result then, and in which case that might force their hand. But yeah, I can't see anything good coming from that from an Everton perspective, sadly.
Yes, well, that's on Saturday lunchtime, and there's plenty of other games to whet your appetite as well over the weekend, including Girona versus Real Madrid, as you've done some bit of research on that one. Jan, you can tell us how that one's going to go down.
I mean, if this was this time last season, this would be a really tasty game, wouldn't it? Because Girona were doing very well. Not so well this season, they're seventh in the table. But Real Madrid, even though they're second by their standards, they're not doing so well, but they are closing the gap. So it should be a win for Real, but let's just see how that one goes.
Barca had their big 125th anniversary game at the weekend, and they lost it.
They lost to Las Palmas 2-1. That's hubris.
That's quite funny when shit like that
happens. Hubris. We love a bit of hubris on this podcast,
don't we?
We do. And those sort of things are the things we really, really, really enjoy. Yes, Girona versus Real Madrid. Girona actually are in a bit better form than they were. They had an awful start to the season and are actually recovering. So that would be quite a good match. Also in there, we got Tottenham versus Chelsea on Sunday afternoon. And if you want to see which games we pick and what we think about them, then get along to sofpodcast.com. Click on the link for the weekend box set and follow the instructions and subscribe. And it will be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
You're persevering with the Tash, I'm pleased to see.
Yeah, persevering.
Are you finding that it's, I was going to say growing on you, but
very much growing on me. Yeah.
It very much is growing on you.
In a very literal way, Tash is growing on me.
We discussed it on Saturday, actually, at one point, didn't we? We decided for you
right.
That a little bit of waxed up turning at the corners would be in order.
That's definitely on the roadmap.
Brilliant. Mm. Yeah. Brilliant.